This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you very much. Alan, as usual, has done some of my job for me, but that's fine. There's quite a lot on some of my slides, and the intention was, I'm assuming those will be available to you after, and I'm not intending to go point by point. Alan, as I say, done some of my work by explaining the structure of the work programme funding. I'd stress that this is a personal view. It's not an Avanta view or an Ursa view, but clearly it's informed by being a large prime, and also it's informed by my contact, as well as being with providers, as well as being the chair of the commercial forum at Ursa. So I do know what a lot of people are thinking and saying, but it is a distillation which is a personal view. It is not attributable to anybody. And like Ursa and most of the industry, I'm a real supporter of the work programme and its principles, and desperately want it to work, as all providers do. And therefore, what I'm hoping to do is to raise a few points. They may sound critical at points, but really what I'm trying to do is to raise some of the problems or some of the issues before they turn into problems, and to look ahead, because I think by managing that together, we can actually make the work programme work. So, I know how many people are from providers and who are not, so I know what the audience looks like. And I'm looking for, have I changed the slide? Does it say procurement of the work programme? Right. Oh. Well, it's not going in the order I expected, but never mind. Good. I'm not going to go through all these principles. I'm just going to really pick out three main points. The transfer of risk is a really important point, because it has transferred in a big way to providers, and that means that it's not just a passing of the ball that takes place. It actually needs active management by both sides. You cannot just simply transfer a risk and say over to you, because there are so many factors that government, DWP, can affect and need to affect in terms of management. So it's not just simply passing the ball, it's about actively managing that together. The second, Alan gave a very good exposition of the national minimum contracted standards based around a non-intervention rate. And in a way, I feel a bit of a fraud, because I'm supposed to be explaining the funding of the work programme. And I can't, because I don't know on what basis that non-intervention rate was reached. And because of that, I can't tell you the basis on which the minimum performance levels were established. And that lack of transparency, I think, has been a big factor for providers, whether they're subcontractors or primes. It would be very helpful to know on what basis those metrics were reached, because maybe that would inform what we're doing. And the other part of this is the selection criteria, which there was a minimum quality standard, but you didn't get more points for extra quality, but you did get extra points for discounting. And it's no surprise that the people who discounted most deeply got most contracts. However, that means that there's less money for subcontractors. And in relation to subcontractors, there was a minimum amount that one had to subcontract. I think the whole of the primes would have been subcontracting significant proportions of the business anyway, across a wide spectrum. And I think Avanta's about 50-50, and most of the others I've spoken about 50-50 commercial and third sector. But what that does mean is that the management fee, because the primes remain responsible, top slices that fee, in some cases by quite considerable amounts. And of course, if it's a managed model as opposed to a mix of direct delivery and subcontract, that has to cover the margin as well as the management fee. The funding model, well, prime differences, and we keep hearing, oh, well, they're longer on programme. Well, yes, they are longer on programme, which means that we have to work with them for longer. And the fees range from 4,000 to about 13,500. And that's a jolly impressive figure. I mean, and 13,500 has been bandied around an awful lot. But when you actually average that per claimant, I've done these figures on the minimum performance standards, it's about 1,300, and only about 200 more for the very difficult cases. And you have to ask yourself whether that provides adequate resource or adequate incentive to deal with those really difficult cases. And in fact, it's about 20 to 30% less than we were getting for Flexible New Deal, which in turn was about 50% less than New Deal. I didn't see anybody's accounts making fantastic profits on either of those programmes. I leave you to draw your own conclusions. We look at the attachment fee. Again, we've got a slight mismatch. You've got 11% for JSA and only 4% of the total available on the harder to help. And again, you have to ask what the incentive being provided might be. Outcome fee is about 30% of the total. But more importantly, and I wrote down what Alan said, sustainment is uncharted territory. And it is exactly that. None of us actually, although Dave's going to contradict me very shortly by telling me there are lots of metrics that can be applied, but in reality, nobody knows whether we can keep people in a job for a year or 2 years. Everybody's got their own systems, everybody's got their own ideas, but we don't know whether that will work. And that's 60% of the fee. So we don't know whether we can achieve 60% of the fee. We've made plans, we think we can, we will have to make that work, but it's a big risk. And the bonus is hardly worth talking about because I haven't met a provider that put that into their financial projections, frankly. I won't spend any time on that. It's the same information that you can get from DWP, and it's the sort of information Alan put up. So, if we just recap on contract performance, non-intervention levels, there's been no transparency on that. The minimum performance, and I'm glad Dave is sitting on the panel because this is his view and other commentators as well as I think most of the industry. It's based on that non-intervention rate, which we don't understand, but the sort of performance levels we're being asked to reach have only ever been reached in the good times and then only briefly. Now, I haven't met a provider that isn't desperately trying to improve performance, and I'd include everybody over the last few years. We're all trying to improve performance all of the time. And the other point here is that they're national standards. Now, I can't do this for the people watching over the web, but who thinks that Cumbria has the same economic circumstances and labour market as London? I can see a number of shaking heads, so I'll take that. That nobody really thinks that those two areas, or the North East, and let's say the home counties. So there's a real chance that national standard will mean that contractors could breach contractual minimum performance standards because of the economic circumstances around their region. And I really think that's something that has to be revisited. And of course, actually, we've got less resources for longer periods on programme. And just to remind ourselves, the latest FND performance figures, 21% for short jobs and 14% for 6 months sustained. That's the highest. The average is shown below. But the important thing for me is that if you look at the spread of those results, nobody's way out ahead and nobody's way behind. And that means that there are two standard deviations around the mean are most of the providers. So if one provider is having difficulties, it's likely that there'll be a much larger number also having difficulties, or if we're all succeeding, then we'll all be succeeding together, and that will be jolly good. But the important thing is to realise that there's likely to be a grouping, whatever is happening around that mean. Just a brief look at the minimum performance, P&L and cash flow, deeply unattractive. So no surprise that everybody, in order to get funding, in order to make a bid financially viable, and indeed, you know, we all have aspirations to do better all the time, did a great deal to put in a bid that would be in excess of that. Indeed, it was a necessity, because the squares on the spreadsheet would not turn the right colour or allow you to put a number in unless it was high enough. So that's quite a difficulty if you think that on a regional basis your performance is going to be lower, but it's actually lower than the standard that will allow you to submit a tender which is acceptable. So there is really little room for regional variation or regional views in terms of the economics and labour market. And another of Dave's charts, which just shows that if you've deeply discounted, you really do need to increase your performance even further. I think that's very illustrative and a very important slide to look at, because if you have deeply discounted, that performance really does need to come up a long way. So, rewards was in my title. I think probably it's too early to say what those rewards are going to be. What we can say is that we've got lower incomes across the industry because the volumes are much lower. We've had the downsizing cost of, I can't remember how many across the industry, Kirsty. And that cost comes at a time when we really could have done with our money to use for working capital. Cash break even, depending on contracts and programs, is about 18 to 24 months. And the return on investment, so for every pound you've invested at the beginning, you will not see a return on that £1 for something like 4 years. That's a long time to look into the future. And I haven't got my Mystic Meg sort of hat on. So there are lower margins because the price is lower. They're longer on program and there's more subcontracting versus direct delivery, and not a great chance of bonus. Now, yes, there is a reward because if you're on the framework, you've the potential to bid for additional work. However, one word of warning, payment by results means working capital. We've all committed a vast amount of working capital to the work programme, and every payment by results contract that piles on top of that, the timing is critical because we may not have working capital to deploy on new contracts. And secondly, if it's not working in any one of those contracts, that affects your ability to deliver additional work. So payment by results, I don't think anybody has a problem with that. Indeed, you know, we're all quite keen on that. But I think there has to be an understanding that you can't just keep piling payment by results upon payment by results, because the industry and providers will have a finite ability to raise working capital. And of course, one of the rewards was staying in the game. And many people didn't have much alternative because they had such a large amount of work within the DWP sector. So, what are the risks to providers? And many of these risks I'm just going to repeat on the next slide, which is risk to DWP. It's a new untested funding model. It is untested. We don't actually understand the basis for it because there's been no transparency. There's been a need to bid high for the bid to be accepted. And nobody has any data to suggest what sustainability will be beyond 6 months. Flexible New Deal did that I know a lot's been said about Flexible New Deal. It's not comparable. This is very different. But it is the closest model that we've got to project results forward. It is the closest model. It was a black box, and many of the characteristics are the same. So that provides risk to, in terms of financial viability for providers, and particularly the smaller subcontractors. This is not just all about prime. This is about every provider. Cash flow, more PBR on top of PBR, and there was an acknowledgement that there's been less ESA, and then we were told that, but there are more JSA clients who are harder to help, but actually you'll still get 4,000 for them. And that, I think we need to understand as an industry that the financing of the work programme is really critical. The amount of money in the programme is critical. And the slightest change of the metrics in terms of mix or volumes will have an effect. And that effect won't be felt necessarily for something like 18 months or 2 years. And so, you know, we really need to think about that now, if for no other reason than to do some scenario planning ahead of time. What will we do if? Regional markets, labour differentials, that's a risk. And of course, the UK economy. And I've heard that we're supposed to have projected 7 years ahead when we were doing our bids as to the state of the economy. Well, I'd suggest to you that if we were that good at projecting 7 years ahead on the economy, we'd be in the city and not being welfare to work providers. Same risks, but if you move down to the bottom, there is a market sustainability and growth. There's a market stewardship piece here. PBR is untested, and it's not attractive to funders because there are no assets. You can't. It's not like PPP where you can secure your lending against a building. We have no assets as work programme providers other than the contract that we hold, and funders like demonstrated metrics. How have you done with this group? How have you done in terms of sustaining people in work? Well, we don't know. And funders don't lend against unknowns. So I think we do need to look at that in terms of the growth and sustainability of the market. And I've already said that more PBR creates an increased need for working capital. And what does this mean? It means that every minute of every day and every day of every week and every week of every month and every month of every year, we need to be measuring what's happening and trying to understand it, because the consequences are 18 months down the line. So we need to know what's happening now so that people don't make premature decisions about staying in or going out. Because remember that in 18 months, most people, unless they're very, very rich providers or they have a benefactor of some sort, may well have worked their way through all their working capital. All new programmes have a lot of rhetoric around them. I'll just buzz through it. Well, FND I don't think was poorly performing, and it wasn't all that different, but it's the closest programme we've got in terms of measuring metrics and comparing. Yes, we have more freedom. There isn't more money. City funders are supportive. Yes, they're desperate to support us, but only when our operating metrics are clear and they know what they're lending against. They know what performance we've had in the past and are likely to do in the future. Well, I've covered the work programme providers being taking account of regional and national labour markets. And it's going to be successful, apparently, I read in the paper, because it was the fastest large-scale procurement undertaken by government. And I think, you know, the providers in the room really appreciated Chris Grayling saying thank you this morning, because without the providers doing their bit, that would not have been the fastest large-scale procurement exercise that the government's undertaken. It's a bit like saying, you know, a drug company saying, I'm going to launch this new drug and you should take it because it's the fastest drug we've ever brought to market. There are one or two things we haven't tested yet. Would we feel confident about that? Procurement is only one part of the piece. The contract management of the work programme is what will make it successful. And I don't think it's helpful to keep repeating that providers will fail or be sacked. You know, that really is unhelpful both to providers and to people looking at this industry by way of putting funding in. So, what are my conclusions? Well, it's a new programme and that needs to be recognised, and we need to take an approach that is a learning process. When David Freud first mooted the work programme, there was a lot of talk about a learning contract or an iterative approach for 2 or 3 years to establish the work, you know, the working metrics of the work programme. We've got the work programme, we are where we are, but what I think we need to do is to say we're in this together. We need a partnership approach, and so far it's not felt entirely like a partnership. That transparency we talked about, we really do need that, and it was good to hear Alan say that we need to be commonsensical about sharing information with local partners. Community partners. Again, Alan said it, but I think that this is a really important point. There's a lot of resources in the communities in which we work. We are a community provider, after all, wherever we are. We might be national companies, but it doesn't matter if you're a national company. If you're not doing well in Wigan or in Maidstone, that's all that Wigan and Maidstone care about. And we have to interact to a much greater extent with the local authorities, chambers of commerce, the LEPs, etc. Really is essential, because the community budgets exercise, I think, may well show us that we've got resources that could be applied to helping our job seekers find work. We don't know what they are until that community budget exercise is done. And it could be just simply human resources to support them. But it could well be money. And we don't actually have a means of quantifying that at the present time. And I think that says it all. This is a lovely piece of work by Salford on a one-parent, five-member family. You don't have to know what the colours of all those interventions are. It just says it's complicated and there are lots of people involved with our clients on the work programme. If that doesn't indicate a need to talk to our communities, to talk to our local authorities and other agencies helping the same population, I don't know what does. And indeed, I mean, there was a calculation, I can't remember what it was, that, you know, that 156,000 per annum could drop by certainly half, if not more. So, last, working partnerships, providers with other providers. Now, we heard about competition this morning. I actually think the reverse is going to be true. I think providers, given the resources that we've got, will start working much more closely with other providers. Alan gave an example of the two providers working with the LEPs locally. I think that's going to just become a necessity. And I think the industry is going to have to grow up when it comes to competition, real competition. Because if you're going to go out and engage with the community and still only get 50% of the people that you've engaged with, why would you not do that with the other provider in that area? It just makes so much sense. So I think there's going to be a much more mature approach to what we've called competition. And finally, we have to have a working partnership with DWP. The two very clear tenets in the supplier charter, which is mentioned in the contract and we've all signed up to as providers, is transparency and partnership. And we desperately need a constructive, transparent working partnership and a dialogue with DWP. And just take a minute to say that, I suppose, to pay Alan an enormous compliment, because him and the contract management team under FND, in my view, did an absolutely exemplary job. It was true supplier relationship management. It wasn't getting the contract and beating one another on the head with it. It may have been tough at times, it was firm, but it was constructive and it felt like a partnership. And I really do think that I hope that all the providers in the room will agree that, that really Alan needs an enormous round of applause for FND and the contract management. It was really superb, and we need to see that again, in my view, on the work programme. It needs to be an iterative approach. It needs to be a constructive approach, and it needs to be an approach which values partnership rather than looking at the contract. Because we can only make the work programme work. This programme is not just vital to the industry, it's vital to the nation. And if we don't work together in partnership rather than standing on one side or other of a contract, it creates risk. And we can't afford to risk the work programme. So we need to work in partnership. Thank you.